Welcome to the 26 Macro and Volatility Podcast. Today is Friday, December 5th, 2025. My name is Eric Bender. I'm joined by our two regular experts, Michael Purvis, CEO of Talbach and Capital Advisors, a cross-asset macro research firm, and Josh Silva, CIO of Passaic Partners, a derivatives specialist and manager of institutional advisory assets. Today, we have a very special guest, Professor Fred Hoffman. Fred is a reformed fixed income portfolio manager who pivoted from 30 years of learning about credit markets to almost a decade of teaching them at Rutgers Business School. Thank you for joining us, Fred. Before we dive into today's topics, we ask that if you like what you hear, please subscribe to the Macro and Volatility Podcast on your podcast platform of choice, Bloomberg and LinkedIn. As always, Michael is available to discuss his institutional research offering. Josh is available to discuss his derivative solutions. And when Fred is not teaching, he is open to catching up if you would like to join him on his fishing boat in Raritan Bay. All right, let's get into it. Michael, let's talk about the Fed. Aside from he who shall not be named, who is going to be leading the charge at the Fed and what does it mean?
Well, Eric, that is a key question, I think, on a lot of people's minds right now. Hassett, of course, is a name that's been dropped by the White House just last weekend. It seems there's some body language to suggest that maybe that's being maybe reconsidered, or at least no, a clear decision seems like it's happening tomorrow, but it will happen soon. But Trump has signaled early January. I think there's a couple of comments I'm going to make here, though, which is let's just zoom out for a second, and that we've had 150 basis points of rate cuts since September of 2024, and yet the 10-year yield is about 50, 60 basis points higher than it was in September of 2024, despite all those policy cuts, right? And the 2-year yield is really not much different than it was either then. So why is that, right? There, and I think one of the things that's going on is that there's a bit of a build back of term premium. We've talked about this in earlier podcasts here, but it's a very, very relevant question, particularly as we get into this discussion about the Fed chair. We certainly have seen some economic weakening here, but it's not tragic weakening. And there's a lot of strength in certain parts of the economy here. And there's a lot of engines of growth that are unfolding for 2026, whether it's things from the Big Beautiful Bill, some tax refunds, to the AI spend that is just simply gargantuan. Doesn't look like that's going to deviate anytime soon. There. And we have 4.5% unemployment, a little bit higher than it was, a little bit uncomfortable here. But at the end of the day, after the 150 basis points of cuts, we're looking at least a couple of more, would be sort of the most hawkish case. And who knows, if Hassett gets the job, maybe he's going to really try to push and bring the group together at the Fed to deliver a lot more than that, because that seems to be one of those cases. So one of the comparisons I like to look through is the mid to late 1990s. It was in some ways it was analogous, not just because of the tech things going on in the equity market, but because nominal GDP was pretty robust. Inflation never got to the Fed's target. And the Fed was what I would say was in a tweaking cycle back then, moving interest rates up a little bit down a little bit after their big hiking phase in 1994 and into early 95 there. So we have sort of a similar thing where the inflation is, right now it's, a lot closer to 3 than to 2. It's been drifting away from the Fed's target. And we saw that in various instances in the later 90s. And yet we have a Fed who's just done 150 cuts and maybe a lot more, right? So I think that's going to, if we get Hassett, we should be expecting higher inflation premium built into the back end of the curve. I would suggest that that is also at least sort of the knee-jerk reaction from the markets will be buy gold and oh, buy equities because rates will be lower here. But let's see who's picked and let's see how the markets respond.
Thanks, Michael. Fred, what do you think a Hassett Fed looks like?
There's probably two Hassett Feds. There's one where he proves himself to be apolitical, eases anyway, but he uses a different style than Powell, but he doesn't look like he's just Trump's whipping boy. I think that's one path. I think the other path is the market believes he is nothing but Trump's whipping boy. The Fed becomes politicized, and the bond vigilantes take Michael's 150 basis points and set the cows on fire. Just if they believe that there's no real diligence going on, we have a problem. There are, even in both of those scenarios, we're going to have to get used to an era where there's going to be dissent. I think we all spent way too much time under Powell and even before Powell reading tea leaves of unanimous decisions. I think those days are over. I don't think that's because of politics. I just think the data looks, wonky. You have inflation and unemployment pointing in two different directions, so you should have dissent. I think we're going to have to get used to that. I also think we're going to have to get used to a Fed that doesn't wait for data anymore. I don't think Hassett is going to be the guy that sits around and says, "Oh, I need more data. I need more data. I need more data." He seems to be, he's going to be a shoot first, ask questions later kind of guy. Once again, is that because that's just the way he's an economist, or is that just because he's getting phone calls at 3 o'clock in the morning with someone screaming at him, "You haven't lowered rates enough"? Well, we will figure that out. But I think the other question to ask is, if not Hassett, then who? It seems like we've all sort of followed our probably market bets. My guess would probably be Wallen. I think Wallen has proved himself to be an economist. I think Wallen has been stayed away from the politics, although Michael and I were joking when he first dissented back earlier in the year. That was clearly a, "Hey, Mr. Trump, over here, look at me. I'm a dissenting guy. Keep me on your radar." I think the market would be a little happier with Wallen than Hassett, but not real sure. But that's my view. If it is Hassett, he's going to have to go out of his way to prove himself, or the vigilantes will make quick meat out of him.
Thanks, Fred. Appreciate that. Josh, what are you thinking on this topic?
Yeah, so I'm not the Fed expert of Michael or Fred, so I'll get more into sort of what I'm seeing with market dynamics, and let those two be the experts that they both are. I think the rate situation is becoming more interesting, and there's a variety of different reasons. I think that I think rate vol is saying nothing to see here. I mean, if you look across the rate vol curve, you look across the SOFR curves, you look around bond curves, like nothing's happening. It's very similar to when I first got into markets trading euro options of like 95, 96, where the Fed seemed done, nothing was happening, and the euro dollar straddle, didn't move for 2 years. And so that it's sort of saying that, and really there is nothing happening in that curve. We're kind of going up and down, trading around, but going really nowhere. So that's kind of where we are. The 0 to 10 part of the curve, continuing on the front end is really not moving. So two fives, tens, the 2-10 curve, it's not really doing much of anything. And so again, we have this 25 basis points price into December. We've kind of gotten to where we are, and sort of wait and seeing. What's getting more and more interesting though is what's happening in the real back end, which is the 30 year. That 2-30 year spread, if you look at a chart, a longer term chart, just continues to sort of steepen slowly but steadily. And I think it's just kind of creeping higher and wider. And we've talked about a variety of different reasons for that, and I'll get into it, my thoughts on that. But I think people are starting to get more and more nervous about supply, whether it's supply for what Oracle's thinking about, whether it's supply of what Meta's thinking about with 40-year bonds. Or today, when you look at what's happening with, Warner Brothers and the Netflix deal, there is a lot of corporate supply. And going back to my 90s bond trading skills, you got to sell some bonds to hedge that rate risk. Credit's as tight as it's been. That should be interesting to see where that goes going forward, in my opinion. Again, back end is determined by supply and demand, not by the Fed. Corporate issuance is large. It's like, I mean, this Netflix Warner Brothers deal is one of the biggest we've ever seen. And I think that's going to push credit wider, and I think it's going to put back end rates higher just because of supply. And it's a difficult theme to fight, I think, going into 2026 with all of this growth that we're planning on using with longer dated bonds. Going to the front end, the Fed moves the front end, like we talked about this, and Michael pointed out earlier, we've seen this. If Hassett comes in and knocks down front end rates by 2%, we're going to get an even more interesting curve. Why? It comes down, like I said, this credit and duration issue on the front end and back end rates. But I just also think we're going to start looking at bond vigilantes and what they're going to say, and that is much more impactful because it's than people realize, but it just hasn't happened in most traders' memories recently outside of the UK. Lastly, I'd like to talk about with rate fall so low, equities for some reason, and I'm laughing about this, got really nervous about Oracle CDS. Like I haven't heard that's like the 08 theme of the markets. Like all of a sudden we're talking about CDS, which having traded financials in 08, I haven't heard that in a long time. So Oracle Credit being a driver of VIX and an equity move, like it's just not really something I've heard or talked about. And it seems sort of like credit guys reaching for stuff. But I will let more of the expert in the room expand on that. So Fred, what are you thinking?
If equity guys are worried about Oracle CDS, we all have other issues. The Oracle CDS widening was so technical and so narrow, and the fact that it spilled all over Bloomberg and spilled into the equity market does make me chuckle. So let me give everybody, if you don't mind, a 30-second brief on what happened out there. First off, CDS was born in the 80s and 90s for a way for banks to hedge risk that they couldn't syndicate or get off their books. So it was strictly a derivative where banks could exchange risk without actually selling the bonds. Moving to the 90s and 2000s, the hedge funds figured out it was a fun place to play with extreme leverage. You can get 10, 12, 20 to 1 leverage on a CDS trade and literally make bets about the survival of companies. All right, fast forward. No one traded Oracle CDS up until maybe the start of this year. To have an active CDS market, you have to have an active cash market. Before Oracle was quote unquote a hyperscaler, they just didn't issue a lot of bonds and no one really cared. There were some Amazon bonds, there was some Amazon CDS, lightly traded Meta CDS, but they at least had a curve. Here comes Oracle, and at the same time, here comes Michael Burry with these guys aren't going to be able to justify their existence. The Oracle bonds went from a 6% yield to a 6.5% yield. Little bit of interest rate, little bit of spread widening, but just keep that number in mind. They went from roughly par to 92. There's what we call a basis trade. If you buy a bond at 6%, and you sell to buy insurance, so you pay a premium to buy insurance, you would have locked in at about 6.5, 590 basis points. You would have had 30-year default risk against 5-year default risk. Not a bad trade, actually, for a triple B. As the 30-year bond yield starts to widen, that arbitrage sticks right around there. The CDS goes from 30 to 135. The arbitrage stays intact. Forget that logic. That's much too much to print if you're a Bloomberg writer. Let's just say the CDS went from 60 to 135 and there's mass panic in the free world. Now, Oracle was the one, if you were going to beat someone up, Amazon has free cash flow. Microsoft has free cash flow. Meta has free cash flow. The only one that doesn't have free cash flow is Oracle. So if you're a hedge fund and you wake up in the morning and someone says to you, "Hey, do you know Oracle CDS is 10 wider?" You say, "Wow, they're raising billions. They don't have free cash flow. That's the one I need to get." So you got a little bit of momentum, a little bit of hedging, a little bit of common sense. It was not the credit market, saying AI is going to fall apart in the next 5 years. It was not that at all. So with that being said, there's my two cents on why for most of the credit market, it was a yawn because it was a multi-technical. And I was surprised how much press it got. Awesome. Oh,
Yeah,
sorry,
I
go
mean,
ahead, Michael.
yeah, Fred, I was just going to say, with your 2 cents, I'll use that to help buy the textbook you co-authored on CDS, because I learned a lot just now. Thank you.
Thank you,
Yeah.
Fred. Thanks, Michael. So that's really helpful. And just pivoting here a little bit, Josh, what do you view, on interest rates, and what do you think the impact of those rates are going to be on equities and equity volatility now?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of people trading, Fred, and we could leave it at that, I think, in markets. And I think people forget there's trading and investing, and traders sort of won the battle last week. But going back to markets and investing, what we're seeing, and I'm going to focus on more on the equity side, since we've spent so much time on the fixed income side. What we saw in November was a significant amount of hedging starting to go through the markets as we get towards the end of the year, and as people want to lock in year-end results, where markets are, nervousness about the new Fed, nervousness about various things. You can see that in a variety of different ways. The first being the simplest way is that we sort of saw a sustained VIX, in other words, realized versus implied, was implied was trading at a higher level. VIX overall was trading at a higher level, but more importantly, we saw skew. Which is the difference between puts and calls, really pick up last month. So the cost of insuring portfolios really picked up about the middle of the month, and that was pretty interesting. We haven't seen that in a while, and so I kind of look at that, and we're sort of, in my opinion, because of that, in sort of a higher vol regime. We've seen the VIX now kind of come back closer into 15, 15 and a half as the nervousness and the hedging has all been done. But I do think we're going to see a VIX sort of higher sustained if we think about going into next year. So what December is, what December is going to be at this point, because I think everyone wants to shut down their books, go home and have a merry holiday and lock in profits. But I think talking into next year, I think we're going to have a much more higher VIX for longer type scenario. And that's something to pay attention to. The other thing I think to pay attention to, again, is we've been talking about markets, what's going to drive the possibility of downside. And I think that's going to be driven by what happens in the fixed income markets. I think if we have this bond vigilante that rejects this new Fed, you're going to have bonds down, equities down, 22 type scenario. And so owning hedges is probably a better way of de-risking than owning bonds if you believe that. I also go back to what's happening in the economy in general. And I'll steal Jamie Dimon's quote. Private credit has seen some, seen a couple of roaches, and typically you find one, you find more. We're going to see how that plays out next year as well. Are we going to see more roaches come out, or is it, all fine? I don't know, but it's something to start paying attention to a lot more than we have in the past, because the bad credit, in my opinion, lives in the private world and not on JP Morgan's balance sheet. Lastly, I think inflation, the down move that we've seen in inflation and CPI is over. In my opinion, I think we're starting to flatten out. You're starting to see that with an uptick in commodity prices, which I think is very, very interesting, what we're seeing there. And I think people need to start thinking about, is inflation not at 3 and going to start heading back up again, which is going to make the Fed job even that more difficult going forward. And I think that's a real, real important thing. And not to sound like our newly elected New York mayor, but prices need to come down, and higher prices are not the friend of bond markets. Unless we get a Fed that we have never seen before, with bond vigilantes declaring war on that Fed, it's a tail risk, but it's a risk nonetheless that we need to talk about.
Thanks, Josh. Michael, what are your thoughts on Josh's comments and others?
Yeah, like, I mean, I look, in terms of VIX higher, I think there's a I see that. I think into 26, the average VIX will be higher there. It's notable that in this past year, we've had a strong equity market for most of the time, and we've never got down to the 11s or the 12s or the 13s, right? there. And Josh and I've talked about this in the past, but the late 90s, you had very robust equity markets and you had a VIX that was rarely below 20. So I think I that to me is part of my sort of framework for looking out into 2026 is this sort of robust, noisy equity market there, but that comes with a higher VIX there. The other thing also, we've been talking about rate vol, and rate vol, yeah, I agree with Josh that the move index, the VIX for the Treasury curve will be subdued next year. If you go back into the mid late 90s when the Fed was in its tweaking cycle, right? But for like 1998, when the Russian ruble crisis blew up, Treasury vol was really pretty low there. So you had sort of like this higher VIX, lower Treasury vol condition there, because the Fed, for all this debate about who's running the Fed and what the term premium is and all that, the range of movements is largely in the hands of the Fed. And the Fed is really, whether we do three cuts or four cuts, in the next, it's just not big news, right? We're not, I think it's pretty fair to assume we're probably not going to be embarking upon a giant hiking cycle in any situation, right? So that's one thing I would remind ourselves is that those mid late 90s analogies are helpful. And I think within equities, I think we were just talking about Oracle and just sort of to weave that free cash flow discussion Fred was bringing up back into the sort of the equity vol framework. Look, I mean, if you look at a lot of the big tech giants, Microsoft, Google, and so forth, their price earnings to growth ratio is very compelling, certainly relative to what else you have in the rest of the stock market, right? They're of course higher PEs, but their growth, if you believe the bottoms up consensus estimates, is very also very robust for the next year or two, right? That gives them, even if they miss some of their earnings, there's some wiggle room there. There's some comfort there. The conflict though is that if you look at a lot of these free cash flow monsters, right, like Microsoft and Google, because of the CapEx spend, they are not the free cash flow monsters that they used to be there. So in my mind, there's sort of like a one of the 2026 things that's going to be setting up is this conflict between free cash flow yields getting weaker, and on the other hand, price earnings to growth ratios saying, buy, and yet worry about the free cash flow yield there. And I think that the determinant of that battle will be where is the return on invested capital from the spend, right? If there's a clear, visible path that we can start seeing, then those stocks are going to keep defining the broader equity rally and have another great year. If they can't, then there's going to be a valuation reset for that. And I think, look, the VIX is only looking at 4 to 6 weeks, but if you think about the volatility range for the 2026, I just think that's going to be an important ingredient into how the VIX and volatility and rotation work next year is this key thing we're all waiting for is how do you translate these massive spends into high margin recurring revenue, particularly when you have a depreciation cycle of 4 to 5 years and a huge chunk of that CapEx.
Well, can we get Fred to disagree with anything of that or be a little controversial here, just to fight it out?
Sure. I think a lot of people misinterpreted Jamie's quote a little bit. Excuse me, Mr. Diamonds. When you find one cockroach, what do you usually do? You open up the cabinets and look for more. I think every credit analyst that waved a lot of this stuff in 2025 was told to go re-underwrite it. The other thing about his comment was they were both fraud cases, right? Tricolor and First Brands were both absolute old-fashioned, take one asset, make three receipts out of it, and leverage that 10 times. So we haven't yet seen, it was his comment, we haven't seen a lot of old-fashioned, hey, I just can't pay my bills. It's going on, don't get me wrong, but if you take the liability management exercise and the default rate, it's still around 6 or 7%. Nothing's spiked out of control. I just think those two headlines caught everybody off guard. And the last one is just supply. I mean, 2026 investment grade supply is supposed to be about the same. I haven't seen any bank or anybody's prediction say it's going to be more. And if you think our deficit's not really growing, then our government's not borrowing more. But the point is, we can't have one or two. The sizes are so big, the incremental buyers have to remain. Nobody could be running for the hills because it feels like it's wound together with a little bit of duct tape and crazy glue. But I don't see supply being the push over the edge thing. I mean, today's an interesting day, right? Yields are up 6, 8 basis points, and stocks are up. That might be the new world. I don't know.
Yeah, interesting. Thanks, guys. So as we close out this podcast, it's been wonderful to have Fred here. What would be a final takeaway as we get ourselves ready for the end of the year and into next year? Josh, you want to kick us off?
Yeah, I think trading is going to become a lot more difficult next year. I think we've sort of been playing this trend as your friend, and it's worked very well. It is I as someone who's spent a large part of their career as a trader, and now I'm an investor. Trading's hard. It's a very, very hard way to make a living. And I think that what we've experienced in the past hasn't been that hard, quite frankly, in terms of trading over the last 5 years. And next year, the trend might not be your friend. And that's just something to pay attention to.
Michael, what do you think?
I'd go back to this whole AI spend. If you think about it, it's the aggregate dollars just from four big tech companies is substantially higher than what Biden's infrastructure and IRA bill, not in terms of their headline announcements, but that they actually deployed. It is just enormous, right? We're talking, a sort of, I call it alternative fiscal stimulus, right? It just happens to be from the balance sheets and the bond markets. The balance sheets of these large companies and then the bond markets, and of course it spills over. If the return on invested capital is starting to look quite dubious, I think that's a major equity market event, and I think it's probably going to spill into a whole a slew of other sectors, and not even those directly, like utilities that are directly attached to the AI spend, but even everything there. It will be a big risk off. It will dent animal spirits. So that to me is, I think, something I'm going to be really watching for. And if you get that in combination with a Fed that really looks like it's losing its independence, then I think we're going to be in a very different world.
Thanks, Michael. And as our special guest, Professor Hoffman, what is your last word?
Agree with Josh. It's not going to be a one-way street like 25 feels like it's ending. But it feels like the only thing that was crazy volatile might have been crypto. Everybody else sort of has had a rather smooth ride. I think we got to
Merrick?
get through the Fed and through some inflation and see what the economy looks like. But I'm with Josh. It's going to be a little harder to make money in here.
Thank you, guys. Free lunch is over, it sounds like. So, thank you, Michael. Thank you, Josh. A special thank you to Professor Hoffman. As always, I learned a lot. You can find them on Bloomberg, LinkedIn, and their respective websites, www.talbakkencapital.com and www.pesepartners.com. Thank you for joining us today. And remember, we will help you keep an eye on the markets.
This podcast is for informational purposes only and is not investment advice. The information, opinions, and views expressed on this podcast are for informational purposes only and are not intended as investment advice. The opinions expressed may not align with Passaic Partners' views or its client strategies. Market forecasts are speculative and should not be the sole basis for investment decisions. Consult your financial and tax advisors before making any investments.